This is Terry Fenneman. Today is June 25th, 2020. I am interviewing Emily Bradbury of the Kansas Press Association for the Community Journalism in Middle America, Challenges and Innovations of COVID-19 Coverage Oral History Project. So, Emily, why don't you start out telling us a little bit about your journalism career?
Sure. I came about this position in kind of an unconventional way. When I got my degree, I actually have a history degree, and I got out of college, and I was the assistant to a statewide elected official here in Kansas, and it was great. It was fun, and I had a lot of interactions with the media. And so the Kansas Press Association, I had worked with them on a project called Kids Voting Kansas. And it is a program that engages kids in voting and civic responsibility at a very young age. And so I worked with them on this project, and they recruited me to come over and run the program from the Kansas Press Association, because we know that newspaper readers are highly engaged, and they had a vested interest in having an engaged readership. And so they said, hey, can you come over and do that? So I started out at the Kansas Press Association 18 years ago as the education director and the director of Kids Voting Kansas. And so I started out there. I ran training programs and learned about journalism from the very best. So I was an employee of all of the publishers and newspapers across Kansas as a employee of their association. So I had the opportunity to learn under some of the best journalists that Kansas has ever seen. And so it was amazing for me to come at it with a love of journalism. And I grew up reading newspapers, and I couldn't start my day until I read the Wichita Eagle. And so I always had a love for them. And so it was neat to be able to learn over the last 18 years from some of the best journalists that Kansas has ever seen. And everything from small community journalism to big city, what you would call urban journalism. And so it was really amazing to learn about that over the last 18 years. So while I don't have a formal degree in journalism, I was able to sit at the feet of some of the very best. And so I've been there 18 years now. I am now the executive director, worked my way up through various positions at the Kansas Press Association. I am the first woman in the history of the Press Association. We've been around for 156 years. And so, that's something that I'm proud of, but I'm more proud of the work that our members do, and that we have been around for so very long and have had such a storied history in Kansas. We actually started the Kansas Historical Society as an organization. We commissioned the John Stuart Curry painting of John Brown in the Kansas Capitol, and we have had our hands in many things when it comes to shaping the state. And so that's just something I'm very proud of and an honor to be a part of.
And how long have you been the executive director?
I have been the executive director for 2 years now.
And how many newspapers are there in Kansas?
We have 175, and plus we also started to allow online-only news publications, and we are up to 4 of those online-only news publications in the state.
When did you first notice the impact of the pandemic on the industry in Kansas?
I first noticed it immediately, actually. This pandemic in Kansas really hit the most populous areas first, which would be kind of a logical assumption. But I started hearing from people on the eastern side of the state saying everyone just stopped advertising, because in the beginning of this pandemic, I can't describe how everything was shifting so quickly. There were days where every 10 minutes things were changing. The governor would make an announcement and, you know, would make a suggestion. And then due to a rise in case, you know, 10 minutes later, something else would happen. And so everyone just really, truly felt like things were just changing so quickly. And a lot of advertisers just immediately said, okay, I'm just going to stop. I don't know what's happening. And so I noticed it pretty much immediately. as far as internal responses to this, you know, I have a staff at the Press Association. So, and I have a couple of employees that are high risk for major complications from COVID-19. So, as an association, we noticed almost immediately, as well as dealing with the impacts of our newspapers. And so trying to walk them through that started almost immediately. So I would say March 5th, 6th, 7th was really when things started to happen quickly. We were also 2 weeks before our annual convention, which threw another wrench in things. But yeah, almost immediately we saw an effect on, started to see the effect on our newspapers.
Have any newspapers in your state closed as a result of the pandemic?
We did. We had 3 newspapers close. The biggest impact that I have seen when it comes to make or break for a newspaper with our free newspapers. The free publications were hit hard. They were hit fast. And they're having a much harder time with recovery. So we've lost 3. Looking at other states, we feel lucky that it's only been 3. However, we're sad that those 3 had to close and are hoping maybe that they're going to be able to open back up in the future.
And what 3 are those?
Sure. It was the Anderson County Community News, and it was the Wellsville Community News and the Baldwin City Community News. It was by the same publisher. So these were 3 that were tied, like I said, very closely together by ownership and pretty concentrated within a 2 or 3 county area.
Do you know a little bit more about these publications? I mean, are these ones that had been around a century, or do you know more about them?
So the Anderson County Community News had been around, I believe it was 25 years, but the Wellsville Community News and the Baldwin Community News were brand new. They had only been started about 6 months prior. These are 2 communities that don't have a newspaper and aren't covered as well as this person thought they should be. So he came in and started a free community paper, which this community's loved. They, I actually live in Wellsville. And so the executive director of the Kansas Press Association moving to a community that didn't have a paper, it was tough. And I felt like this community deserved a paper. So it was great. When Vern Brown was his name came in and said, you know what, we need to start a free paper. But unfortunately it did not survive this pandemic. But the communities really are missing it already. So I'm really hoping we can get something going again.
What furloughs or production changes are you aware of in Kansas?
Sure. We've had numerous rolling furloughs. We have Gannett newspapers in Kansas, as well as McClatchy. And we have 1 Ogden paper. Those 3 companies had rolling furloughs. As far as some of the local community newspapers, we have had some furloughs there. They're not on a massive scale, but they're every once in a while I'll hear of some rolling furloughs, but they haven't been numerous. But we've also had, as far as publication and production changes, we have 2 pretty significant locally owned groups that, in the face of this pandemic, in order to, you know, save on costs of printing, combined 3 newspapers into 1. And so those were 2 separate groups that went from 3 newspapers down to 1 newspaper.
Tell us who those groups were and what the papers were.
Sure, absolutely. So it is the Harvey County News is what they're calling it. And that's Joey Young's papers, Kansas Publishing Ventures. And that was the Harvey County Independent, the Newton newspaper, and the Hillsborough paper. They rolled it into 1. And the other group is Travis Mounts' group, and that is in Cheney, Kansas. And so they rolled the Hayesville Sun-Times, the Times Sentinel, and the Conway Springs newspaper into one. And what came out of this was very interesting because they did it to save costs, but what they have heard from their readers is that they love it. They both admit that we didn't anticipate the readers being so interested in what was happening in their neighboring communities during this time. And so I'm not so sure that those are going to break back out into individual papers because they have had such a great response from their readers about how this has gone and how much they enjoy it. They haven't cut pages. They've actually added pages because those three have, you know, they have combined papers. So the readers are not only feeling like they are getting more for their money, but they are also able to kind of understand how the pandemic is affecting even neighboring communities differently than it's affecting theirs. And so that has been really interesting to watch. And I'm really excited to kind of, when this situation kind of settles out a bit, to kind of look back at that as maybe a case study on how they figured out what their readers wanted and what to give them what they needed and how this process kind of went and the outcome of that. But those are the major production changes that I have seen when it comes to those two groups. Those were probably the most drastic changes I've seen.
In other states, you're hearing about some dailies that are cutting back and having fewer print days of the week. Is that happening in Kansas?
That was happening before the pandemic and was not as a result of the pandemic. We are down to about 20 dailies in Kansas. And so we had steadily been decreasing that number just because of cuts to production days. So, but there was none that were directly tied to the pandemic. Our papers have been doing that for quite a while prior to this situation.
So related to that, maybe even if you're not seeing it so much here, I mean, it's still interesting that newspapers have spent years debating print versus online and when cutbacks to print would need to happen. And you're now seeing that happen much more quickly. You know, maybe talk a little bit about that and how you're seeing this or not seeing this as kind of a pivot time for the industry.
Sure. I think it really is a pivot time. And one thing that I think that has come out of this, and we can talk a little bit more about it in a little bit, but I think one thing that we have really encouraged our members to do for years is to not ignore their online presence. The statistics on readers accessing newspaper websites since this pandemic started is that the latest number I saw was 54%. And for too long, our newspapers have ignored their digital presence. And I think this pandemic has given them the push that they have needed to really look and analyze and make time for their digital product. So I think that it is interesting that it took an emergency to set it in motion, but I think it was one that needed to happen. And innovation sometimes comes out of these types of situations. And so it is very interesting that it took an emergency, but I think that they also understand that it needed to happen and that they need to focus on that more. And I'm seeing that already. And we're providing opportunities for our membership to do that, to while they're not on, and it's understandable that this is a difficult time. You know, like we talked about before, the furloughs are happening. They are dealing with less staff and even more work to do. But really trying to get them laser focused on, look, people are looking for you. They're looking for the information only you can provide. And you need to meet the readers where they are. And here's where they are. We have firm statistics on where they're at. So we need to help you as an association to make sure you can capture that part of your readership and audience. And so, yeah, that's been very interesting to navigate, but it's one that needed to happen.
So you touched on this already, but let's talk a little bit more about the financials and newspapers' relationship with advertising and how that has changed during the pandemic.
Kansas being such a large, geographically large state, it has been very interesting to watch how this has affected different communities in different ways. Like we talked about earlier, there were, you know, parts of the state, the eastern part of the state, I would say, was impacted quickly and the bottom dropped out of advertising just almost immediately. And then I was hearing from publishers in the southwest part of the state and the northwest part of the state that, quite frankly, didn't have a positive case for months after this pandemic started here in Kansas. And they weren't seeing any drop in advertising. And so in some areas, I have papers holding steady because it didn't affect their county as much. I have others that it is absolutely and completely dropped out of the picture. And so I have newspapers that are pivoting a bit to doing donation models, which is a whole other, you know, debate in the industry of asking for money and how does that impact future reporting. But it's really prompted our members to take a look at their relationship with advertising and realizing that if they didn't before, that there's got to be diversity in your revenue model and that you can't just go to one pot and one well for that money over and over and over again and be secure that if this, God forbid, happens again, that you can rely on that and that you have to have a plan. And so I'm really seeing a lot of thinking around, we've got to diversify our revenue model. What does that look like? It looks different for different people in different communities, but I think the relationship with advertising, while it's still the number one revenue driver for my papers, our papers are also looking at it saying, we can't rely on this all the time and in every situation. And so we've got to diversify. So that's kind of how the relationship has changed. I'm seeing a lot of talk and a lot of discussions about how to pivot and where do we go from here? And we see news, you know, we are now, like you said, on June 25th. We are well into month three of this pandemic here in Kansas, and we're seeing a lot of talk on how this is going to work.
So kind of going off this discussion, I mean, the business model discussion has been going on, of course, in the industry for a long time. We were talking before we started recording that you are rescheduling your state convention that's now coming up in August instead and needing to do that virtually. You know, what does the industry need to do? Is this something that state conventions should be talking about? I know, of course, you're involved with the National Newspaper Association. What does the industry need to do to come together to solve this business model issue?
I think there has been a lot of groups working on this, but I feel that there are too many that have their hands in the pot. And I think there needs to be a collaborative effort on how we're going to solve this. While I appreciate all of these groups doing that, and I read all the time about the latest research and what people are recommending, and it's wonderful. And I'm so happy to be a part of some of these organizations that are doing that. I really think there has to be a collaborative effort on how we're going to move this industry forward, because there are so many options out there. And that doesn't mean that a one-size-fits-all approach is the way to go, because I don't believe that. I see that in my state that, you know, a nonprofit model may work in some of the more populous areas of the state, but it's not going to work in my Southwest Kansas papers. Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. But, you know, the same thing just cannot work in the same place all the time. So I think there has to be a real concerted effort by all of the stakeholders to really move forward together to try to figure this out and try to say, how are we going to do this? Because I think there's just so much at stake if we don't figure this out. You know, we have the nonprofit model, the donation model. how can we pivot and have some sort of a template for those papers that really need some help right now? Because I think the stakes are just too high if we can't figure this out.
Going back to our discussion about the very beginning of the pandemic, why don't you talk about the pitch for journalists to be labeled as essential workers in Kansas?
Sure, absolutely. So one of the things, the first calls that we made was with Governor Kelly's office. My first thought was I need to protect my members' ability to do their work, because I know how important it is, and I knew how their communities were looking to our news publications for guidance on what to do. Most people alive have never been through this pandemic before, and I knew that people were needing all the information, and we had to get every obstacle out of their way for our reporters to do that. So we wanted to clarify and make sure that the members of the media would be considered essential, because non-essential businesses were being shut down. And so that was a process that I worked through with the governor's office and our contacts there, of deeming the media. And we also worked with the Kansas Association of Broadcasters, who are great friends of ours. We feel like we're better together. And so we went to the governor's office together and made that pitch to say, please, we need to have you designate members of the media as essential. And she gladly did. She understood the importance of that and followed that guidance and has worked with the media well during this pandemic. But that was the number one priority when this started, was getting our members deemed essential. And that was wonderful and great, but that didn't mean there weren't problems at the local level. Now, those were just a handful, but I found myself on the phone with a sheriff's officer in one county. They didn't get the memo that a reporter could drive across state lines to cover a story or pick up newspapers or deliver newspapers. But again, those were few and far between. There was never any aggression when it came to, it was just really lack of knowledge on how that was supposed to be implemented. So that was our number one priority in the beginning, was trying to make sure that our members were deemed essential. And we learned a lot during that process, and we were successful, and we were grateful for the relationships that we as an association had built in state government. And it was really nice to see them step up and realize that we were the go-to people when they needed to get their message out. So that was nice to see during a really stressful time.
You gave us a few examples earlier related to Joey and Travis's papers, but what are some other innovations that you've seen newspapers in Kansas do during this time?
Sure. You know, I talked about, we had a lot of national groups step up with either funds to place ads or grants. That's been a really interesting dynamic to see Google and Facebook step up with a lot of money. Don't get me wrong, it's been wonderful, but also the talk about how much Google and Facebook over the years has kind of taken from our industry. But it was nice to see them step up and do the right thing and try to provide some funds when our newspapers needed it the most. I talked about a donation model. We had quite a few companies that provide our newspapers with websites or aggregation tools that they had used, like Town News is a good example, that provided their clients with a donation button and a way for kind of just look at the public broadcasting model, you know, allow people to become donors to their local newspaper. So what was really interesting about that program is that we had quite a few papers put it on their websites, but they had a really hard time promoting that. And so that has been very interesting to watch, that dynamic. I think a lot of people are afraid of, what does that mean for coverage? Or does it mean anything? I don't know. They're still new to this kind of donor model. What are the expectations going to be from your donors? And it's a real culture shift with the with having that kind of donation button on your newspaper webpage. But that's what some of our newspapers are doing. They really pivoted to try to find ways to help communities, their communities, with the impacted businesses, with funds from the less impacted industry. So a good example is I talked about Joey Young's publications, and one of the first things they did is they identified two industries in their town that were ramped up because of the pandemic, and they had no problems with finances because they were an essential business and they were producing products that was needed during this time. And so they went to those industries and they said, okay, our local mom and pop restaurants and shops are closed down. They're not essential. How about you pay for a page to advertise these businesses and to talk about where they're at during this pandemic, whether they are offering, you know, their restaurant offering carry out, or there's an update on hours. And so they went to these different places to kind of sponsor those ads, which was wonderful. And they had great success on, and we were able to share those kinds of ideas with our papers. We started pretty quickly, started having weekly member calls with our members, which has proven to be very successful in not only sharing ideas, but bringing together our members to realize they are not alone. And when you have a group of people that are so used to being out in their communities, interviewing people and helping, to know that they can get on a call, a weekly call with their fellow members and the association staff and ask questions and talk and laugh and during a very difficult time was something that I thought was so simple to do. And I thought I don't know how helpful this is going to be, but it's been very helpful. And we have had numerous comments about how helpful that was. If anything, like I said, just getting on a call and realizing they're not alone and hearing ideas from across the state. We also had a great program called Frontline Worker of the Week. And this is where some of our newspapers went and focused on the frontline health workers, and had maybe a nursing home sponsor that series. And that was a huge success in multiple communities across the state. So there are so many different innovations. Also a grant, an advertising grant program. The Great Bend Tribune, under Mary Hoisington's leadership, decided they were going to do a matching grant program for advertisers. And so if you bought, you know, $2,000 worth of advertising, you were going to get $2,000 for free. And what I don't think she anticipated was she had 80% of people who bought into that program that were new advertisers. They had not been advertisers before in her paper. And so that is a wonderful way that she was able to pivot and say, okay, let's do this grant program. And she is retaining those people. The grant is ending this month, but she has people from this new group already buying advertising into the fall. And so she was able to retain those new groups. So I'm seeing a lot of innovations. You know, they're not sometimes on a huge scale, but they are important to that newspaper and to that community. And so that's what I've really been seeing, a lot of targeted, intentional advertising and other information campaigns, while also sharing it with members across the state, and then they're able to adapt that to their local communities.
So you've mentioned the member calls and ensuring that journalists were labeled as essential workers. Are there any other things that the state association has done to try to help your newspapers?
Yes. We also very quickly put out a COVID resource page. There was so much information coming at everyone in the beginning, that was really, really hard for our newspapers to kind of sift out what was important to them, what was important to their communities. How were they getting information? Who were they supposed to call for the COVID-19 new numbers at the state? How was everything working? And so quite quickly, within the first week of this pandemic, we knew that we had to get some sort of resource page together. And so it was wonderful that the Wisconsin Newspaper Association, who has been a great friend to our group, allowed us to kind of work with them on kind of adapting it at resource page to our needs here in Kansas. And so we put that up very, very quickly. And we became, for a while, the conduit between the government and our papers. So, like I said, when we worked with the governor's office, I was on the phone with the governor's office probably 4 or 5 times a day within the first 2 weeks of this pandemic and trying to get information out as quickly as possible to our members. So that was a wonderful go-between. We were able to get out the message, the safety messages that the governor needed to get out, information on things that she was going to announce to our paper, so they were prepared to cover that. So our role in this has shifted, and it sometimes on a daily basis to whatever our members need. We are an information source for our members. We are, a conduit to information for our members. But I think that the thing that has made us successful in meeting our members' needs is knowing that is the case, that we're going to have to pivot every single day with what is going to happen, because no one knows what's going to happen. And so we need to be that steady while pivoting. We also need to be a steady presence for our members and let them know that they can call us for anything that they need. And so while kind of at the 1,000-foot level, we are trying to meet the needs of the entire state and get that information out, we are very aware that, like I mentioned before, the needs of a paper in Shawnee County are going to differ from the needs of a newspaper in Meade County. So we are just an organization that really tries to meet our members where they are while sometimes pushing them a little bit. And we've been able to do that during this crisis as well, to kind of move them forward, like we talked about on digital, getting a presence out there and still moving the organization, our members, forward while meeting them while they're at and providing whatever they need.
We've talked about financials and production and really some content as well. So kind of overall, how do you think this pandemic is changing journalism as an industry?
I think it is speeding up the discussions that we talked about earlier about how are we going to make this work and what do we do to make this work. And I think the discussions around, you know, conversion rates and paywalls. As you know, a lot of our newspapers took down paywalls at the beginning of this pandemic, especially for COVID-19 news. And there's a lot of discussion right now on what happened when people put them back up. What can we learn from that? And so I think there is just real-time data that, and situations, this COVID-19 situation has provided us an opportunity to truly look on what happens when some things that have always been talked about in theory actually happen. And I think there's some data that's coming out right now and will be coming out in the future that is going to allow us to band together and figure out how we're going to make this work.
Going off of that, what changes have you noticed with newspaper readers during the pandemic?
You know, I think there has been a renewed importance on what a newspaper does for the local community. And it's amazing to see, it's amazing to hear. And I hate that it took a pandemic to have some communities and have, you know, some groups of readership realize the importance of their local news. But like I talked about earlier, this pandemic has hit the state of Kansas so differently that no one is going to cover their local community like their local newspaper and their local news source. And so that's what has been amazing to watch, is that, like I'd mentioned before, the people in Meade County are going to have a completely different articles about how the pandemic is affecting them, because it hasn't affected them as greatly as it has affected other parts of the state. And so that renewed appreciation has been heartening for a lot of our papers. And so now we just have to figure out how we're going to pay for it.
How has the pandemic influenced you personally?
You know, it's been very interesting. I have 2 children and I am married to a school superintendent. So when this all happened, you know, the schools shut down as well. And so it was very interesting the first month of this. So I had two kids at home and I had a husband who had to completely reinvent the education model for his district within about 7 to 10 days. And so it was quite stressful. Luckily, my children are very resilient and kind of went with the flow, which was good. But we also, you know, as an association, we had had our building up for sale for the last 2.5 years because we realized we don't need an 8,000 square foot building for 4 people. And so during this pandemic, as we had talked about earlier, how we were pivoting and meeting our members where they were and, you know, trying to do all of these things to help our members with the very important job that they had, we sold our building during this pandemic, and we had 4 days to pack it up and move. And we had been in that building since 1988. So in the middle of this pandemic, we also had sold our building and in 4 days packed up our building and did an entire move during this crisis. So that has been very interesting. So we now are settled into remote work, and that was a real blessing in the fact that we got our building sold, because that has been the only commercial building that has sold in Topeka, Kansas since this pandemic started. So we were lucky to be able to sell it. But now as an association, as a staff, we are to the point now where we're looking ahead and our members are seeing a reopening of their local economies. They are seeing advertisers start to come back. They are getting back to quote unquote business as usual. And so right now we are doing some really thoughtful work on what is our role? What is our role in moving this industry forward in this state, while at the same time making sure that our members are prepared and diversified the next time a global crisis or local disaster happens? And so we are doing a lot of thoughtful work on where we go from here.
Just a couple of follow-ups. What's your husband's name and where is he the superintendent?
Sure. His name is Ryan Bradbury, and he's the superintendent in USD 289 Wellsville, Kansas. I have a 15-year-old son and a 10-year-old little girl.
And tell us, what was the address of the old KPA location and where are you located now?
Sure. So the address of the old location was at 5423 Southwest 7th Street. And that was in Topeka, Kansas, and 66606. And we are now remote. So we are now working remotely. But our new address, as far as mailing address, is 4021 Southwest 10th Street, and that's in Topeka, and 66604.
So is that just a mailing? Will you eventually move into a new space?
We don't believe we are right now. The plan was, yes, to get a rental office. But right now we're just kind of holding tight where we are. Working remotely has, increased productivity, with our staff and has worked out quite well and has allowed us as an association to cut our overhead by quite a bit, that with that money, we're just putting it back into our membership. So right now we're just holding tight. Our board just feels like everything's working fine right now. And so we're just going to kind of wait and see what happens. We may have an office eventually, or we may just be remote for the time being and kind of see what happens.
So talking about these changes, you know, what changes to newspaper operations during the pandemic do you think will continue once it's over?
Sure. So I talked about working remotely. We had a long conversation at our board meeting last week about newspapers saying the same thing. Their reporters went remote. While they were essential, we had some newspaper workers that went ahead and went remote due to childcare issues or because that maybe they were high risk. And overwhelmingly, people have said it's worked out wonderful. It's been wonderful. It's been great. We've had a newspaper combine their offices into one office. because of that very fact that they were able to take that savings from that overhead and put it back into their publication or into their employees. So I think the working remotely is going to be something that is going to stay. I think the listening that has happened during this pandemic to their readership is something that's going to stay. I think that this pandemic has provided an opportunity to really, truly interact with their readers and to say, what do you need from us? So there were things we all know that there are things that readers need to know, but they're also trying to figure out what your readers want and what they're looking to you for. And there has been a lot of listening done during this pandemic. And I think a lot of that is going to stay. It's going to be a real listening by our membership to their readers. I think that will stay. Not that that wasn't being done before, but I think, like I said before, there's been such data that's been able to be gleaned from this pandemic that, you know, we have always talked about in theory of what you would do during a natural disaster, but what can you actually keep and what lessons have we learned? And that is another thing that we're going to be talking about as an association with our members about what are some lessons that we learned that we can move, take forward and really to make our industry better. So those are a couple of things that I think are going to move forward with them. And another, you know, the importance of having a digital presence and having a good digital presence is very, very important. And that's something that we as an association are working with vendors to provide some member benefits for our members to move them forward with a web presence, because that's something that we cannot overlook. They need to capture that readership, and that needs to be, you know, as important as their print product. There's questions on the revenue model for digital. I understand that it can't pay the bills the way it's set up right now for a lot of publications, but I think having that presence is very, very important, and it can't just be a PDF you slap up on the web. It needs to be some interactive ways to capture your readership, and there are ways to do that. And that's what we're going to do and help our membership move forward. And I think the importance of that is going to stay.
What changes to newspaper operations during the pandemic are you most ready to see just done and over?
I think the panic. I think that has been big for our papers. The panic, the constant stress of they have never had more work and they have never been more important to their community, while having the real fear that they won't be able to do that work that they love and are so good at, and that's so important. And so I think the fight or flight of having to make decisions on the fly, because in an emergency situation, I think everyone is ready for that to go and to really be at the point where we're able to look at a situation and very thoughtfully look at where they need to go, so the next time there's not so much panic in the response to a natural disaster or a pandemic. I think that's what everyone, I think, is ready to see end.
How has the pandemic influenced your own views of the role of journalism in society?
I, like I had mentioned before, I've been doing this working in the journalism industry for 18 years, and I've always felt like what our members do is valuable and important. But in this instance, for some communities, they were providing information to the public that for some groups of people could be life or death. And I've never been more proud of them. I have never been more proud of a group of people that were in a situation where they did not know whether they were going to be able to keep their employees on staff or if they were going to be able to print another week, but still dig in and do what was best for their communities. And they were not only doing that and providing information to the public, they were also holding their local governments accountable, because when all of this started, of course, in-person meetings weren't able to happen. And so there was a huge pivot on what open meetings and open records. How do we get open records when the city, when City Hall is closed? Who do I contact? How do I attend the city council meeting when they're not meeting in person and they can't figure out how Zoom works? And all of these things. So they were not only fighting financial stressors and trying to provide information that, like I said, in some communities was life or death for some vulnerable parts of their population, but they were also holding their local governments accountable and trying to get that information out to the public. So for a group of people in an industry to do what they did, in my opinion, was nothing short of miraculous. And I think had a huge impact on how their communities are recovering and how their communities responded to this pandemic.
What do you want readers to know about journalism right now? You know, in addition to being in a pandemic, we're definitely in a time of a culture where at a national level, we're considered to be an enemy of the people, and there has been a lot of mistrust in journalism. And so what do you want readers to know about journalism right now?
I want them to know that it's worth their money. And there are statistics, and I could throw them out, and about, you know, the cost of bonds in a community. I believe it's 11 points goes up when there's no newspaper. There are less candidates who run for mayor and local office when there's no newspaper. I just believe that no matter what side of the aisle that you find yourself on, that there are implications for some of the causes that you find important, and they're going to be negative if you lose your newspaper and your local news source. I truly believe that, and I feel like readers need to understand that. And I tease our membership all the time. I say, you are so good at telling other people's stories, but we are not very good at telling our own. And I think that has to change. So I think that needs to change. And what that looks like, I don't know. But we've got to do better at telling our stories and providing that value for our members, which is what we have, or for our readers that we have provided for so very long, but making them understand that it costs money to provide that content. There's such a disconnect between news and that it costs to produce that news. And whether that be through ads or donors or eyes viewing, you know, viewership online, we just have to understand as a society that we lose a lot more when we lose a publication than what is on the surface. And I think that readers have to know about that no one is going to cover a community in rural Kansas like their local news publication. We can always get into arguments about sometimes even broadcast or the big papers and how they're covering things. But when it comes right down to it, when 95% of my membership are local community papers in these small towns that don't really get any national or statewide coverage unless a tornado runs through their town or if they have a flood, they have to understand that if you are willing to pay for internet, if you're willing to pay $80 a month for internet, and you're willing to pay for streaming services, and you're willing to pay for other things, that you don't blink an eye at spending the kind of money that we spend on that, that the few dollars you're going to send to your local community newspaper can make the difference between you paying more in taxes or paying less, or having more transparency in your local government or having less. And we have to be better at telling our story. And that's what I hope comes out of this, is that readers can understand that and they can place a value and have a renewed value on what that publication has done for their community during this pandemic.
What would you want journalists 100 years from now, who may be covering a new pandemic, what do you want them to know?
I want them to know that in the midst of an emergency, in the midst of what can seem like a hopeless situation, when they look at their financials, that what they're doing is important. and what they're doing matters, and that no one else can do what they do. And they look out for their communities like no one else, and to keep doing what you're doing. And I hope by then, when people are looking at this 100 years from now, that we have a playbook for these types of things and different revenue streams to help our newspapers overcome some of the challenges. But I want them to know that even in the situation that looks, like I said, so hopeless, that what they're doing is important, and that people will look back 100 years from there, from that time, and know that what they did truly made a difference and will continue to make a difference.
Is there anything else you wanted to talk about?
I don't think so. Did I cover everything that you wanted me to cover?
Yeah. Okay, well, this is the conclusion of this oral history.